everyone. And I know we've got a lot of people that are logging in. We had a lot of folks registered for today's session, so we're going to get right to it as soon as possible. Welcome to another episode of GovCon Coffee and Issues with Carol Bernard and Michael Lejeune. There's my partner, Michael Lejeune. Today he's got his Vols hat on. I told him, hey, you're from Louisiana. You need a LSU hat or a Saints hat. But I guess because you're volunteering advice today, we're going to allow it. We just both went to the 8A conference, and as we were discussing over what we're going to talk about today, because you and I both actually had tables at the conference where we were doing some roundtable sessions that were sponsored by Bank of America. And we heard a lot of issues that people were having. And you said that people are still having a lot of confusion about teaming.
It actually surprises me when I talk to people who've been in the market a while and still don't understand teaming, and they confuse teaming with joint ventures. And yeah, they're all kind of teaming type of relationships, but people kind of mesh it all together and make it like one big thing. And they're like, hey, do I have to get this approved by the SBA? And, you know, there's all these different questions they have. And I think being able to help clear up some of that and answer some specific questions will be helpful today. But even just distinguishing teaming from joint venturing will be helpful as well. And so I'm very anxious to get into the Q&A side of things with folks, see what questions they have about teaming. But I will give you my little soapbox on teaming real quick. I think teaming is, to me, essential before you go down any road with another company. Before you go and say you're going to go into a mentor-protege, before you're going to do a joint venture, anything like that, I think teaming is essential because teaming does not marry your company to their company. It sort of does if you win a contract, like if they're your sub or you're the sub, then you're kind of married to them for that contract and your performance and stuff like that. But it's only on that. It's not legally binding you to them like a joint venture or anything like that. And it's not a long-term commitment like a mentor-protege. You can simply set up a teaming agreement where the two of you decide, or more companies decide, you're going to work together on a specific opportunity. Here's what your work share is. Here's what their work share is. Or here's the task areas that you're going to focus on, that sort of thing. And that's it. You're basically done. Once you actually win the contract, then you put together a subcontracting plan for the subs that are on the team. And that's it. Whereas when you get into joint venturing and mentor-protege and all that kind of stuff, you're really long-term tied to those companies. And I just see way too many companies jump the teaming step and go right into what I would consider like the marriage step right out of the gate. And that's where I hear a lot of the horror stories where people have come to us and said, hey, we jumped into this really fast and now we're married to this company for X number of years, or we're in a joint venture and I don't know how to get out of it and they're not doing their part, or it's a mentor-protege situation and they're like, they're not mentoring us at all. All they're doing is waiting for us to bring us opportunities. I feel like we've wasted this shot we had with the mentor-protege because you can only have a couple of those. And so I think it's really smart for people to look at teaming as the first option always when you are working with a new company. It's just like dating a little bit. You're getting a chance to figure out if you like that company. Do they have the same ethics, morals, values? Can they deliver on what they said they were going to do? Because maybe on paper, they presented a really good case. But once you started working with them, they became a troubled client, basically, for you on a contract. And so it's just really good to know all that stuff before you get any deeper on it. So that's my quick soapbox on teaming.
Awesome. Yeah, those are some great points, Michael. And I think what I would like to do for the folks that might be brand new and haven't really experienced it, but maybe they heard about this teaming thing before, I would like to maybe just step back and say, first of all, what is teaming exactly? Essentially, it's simply two or more businesses partnering up to pursue a contract. Now, for a lot of small businesses, and this is something that we also talk about a lot, Michael, and I know that Josh Frank, your partner, also talks about it a lot, but the advantage of coming into the federal marketplace as a subcontractor, so essentially you are working to get yourself onto somebody else's team, right? So that's right. A good place to start. But also, the federal marketplace is a very unique marketplace because it's one where there's a lot of times where the equation will flip, and what would normally be a prime and a sub, where you're the sub, because of the way that the set-asides in the federal contracting marketplace happen for 8A, for service-disabled vets, women-owned businesses, hub-zone firms, and generally all small businesses, but there's a lot of money, billions of dollars that's set aside and sometimes sole-sourced to those firms. So that's why you see the flip around sometimes, because a lot of those bigger companies want access to some of those small business contract opportunities. And the only way that the bigger firms, or if you're maybe not a bigger firm, but you don't have that type of certification that it's being set aside for. So it's not always a large and a small. It could be two smalls, but maybe, Michael, you're a hub zone firm, and I see there's something that's kind of like right up our alley. I'm not a hub zone firm, so I'll go to Michael and say, hey, together we both can like knock this out of the park. This is right up our lane. I'm not hub zone. You want to take the lead on it. So that's kind of how the teaming works in reciprocation to what you generally see. But yeah, I would say this, that definitely think about getting yourself as a subcontractor on a federal project underneath another partner. This is a really great way, which was like what Michael was saying. This is a great way to date. And this is what you're also going to see. Even the good folks that are pretty savvy out there, they're going to be like, well, why don't we like do a couple of projects together before we like go down this road and jump into SBA mentor protege program or joint venture. And I'm going to talk about how those two relate to each other and to teaming in general for a second. But anyway, this is where we see a lot of people getting confused, because like, okay, do we need to do a joint venture? Do we need to do a teaming arrangement? I've spent a lot of time in this arena all the way going back to 2012. I've been part of teaming deals. I've helped a lot of businesses do teaming deals. And I think, Michael, what the challenge is a lot of times is, and you see this by the government agencies, is that sometimes they say, well, you need to have maybe a joint venture if you want to collect all of the past experience and everything from both firms. So it, a lot of times it puts the small businesses in a hard place to kind of force them to have to joint venture. In fact, I was just speaking with somebody recently that was telling me on one of the big contracts that had just gotten recompeted that they required, like if you're going to team up, you need to come in with a joint venture, which is extremely difficult now, because the process to get there, first, you got to have a relationship with the partner that you want to do the joint venture with. But essentially, the difference between the teaming, like, you know, what Michael was explaining, where you just simply do a subcontract together, and the joint venture is, in a teaming deal, you'll just do a prime sub partnership, like it's pretty standard in a lot of government contracting and contracting anywhere else. But within the joint venture, you're literally forming a separate company. So you got to get like an LLC registered, if that's the entity of choice, where both parties will actually have ownership of that entity. You have to understand the legalities of not allowing your partner to take too much if you want to actually get that joint venture also certified as like a veteran-owned business with the certifications that you have. That might be 8A, because those joint ventures could be certified, but your non-certified partner can't take the majority of the stake.
Right.
And then you got to get that entity registered in SAM. And by the way, if it's a large business, it actually has to go into the SBA's Mentor Protege program, because otherwise there's an exception. Well, there's an affiliation rule that exists. So let me talk about this one, and then I'll take a little break here for a second, Michael. So here's where it is. In the promotion, I talked about how to leverage this little known loophole, if you will, that allows like a large business and a small business to do a joint venture together. And that exists only within the SBA's Mentor Protege program. Now, what would happen if Michael and I decided to do a joint venture? Well, it would probably be okay, because we are both small businesses. So what they will do is the government will look at the size of both of our businesses and they combine it. And as long as we're still under this, you know, small business threshold for the NAICS code issued under that procurement, Michael and I can joint venture all day. We don't necessarily need to get into the SBA's Mentor Protege program to have the affiliation exception, is what it's called, affiliation exception. However, let's just say Michael is a project manager for Microsoft, and we wanted to partner up. Now, I can't just joint venture with Michael without being in the Mentor Protege program. So that means that, Michael, look, if you guys really want to do this, I've got some opportunities identified that are coming down the pipeline, and we want to get into the SBA's Mentor Protege program so that we could set up a joint venture and have more teeth, I guess, if you will, to make sure that when we're going after this big contract that we've identified, both of our past performance and past experience will be counted. But we can't do that unless you are in with us into the Mentor Protege program, because it allows that exception to affiliation. So what the SBA is essentially saying is that, hey, you know, big business, if you will mentor this small business, we will give you an exception to that affiliation, and your joint venture that you may own 49% of can actually be a small business and can actually get certified. But there's a lot of steps in the process to this. We have some training on Govology, and I'm going to point you to some of that, because this is where we cannot cover all of the ins and outs of this just in 1 hour session here. But I would really encourage you to get some education on this. I would encourage you to talk with an attorney on this about your business and what that looks like. And we're going to answer a lot of questions, but it's not surprising, Michael, why so many people get confused is because you hear about it and they get a little information here and there. But here's where I think another big problem is that if you're going out to get your information from YouTube and you're listening to something that's 3 years old or 5 years old, there's been a lot of changes to the rules. I mean, and yeah. You mentioned something where people are saying, do I need to get this approved? That's something that it used to be for the 8A firms that were doing joint ventures, used to have to get approved. There was a separate 8A mentor protege program, but now it's all small mentor protege program, and now they're treating the 8A firms like all smalls, and there's no SBA approval anymore to look over the JVs. Mm-hmm. So a lot's changed, and I can see why, because I know a lot of people looks at YouTube for things, but this confusion probably is all over the place.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And you're talking right now primarily about the SBA's mentor protege program. Then you throw in there that has one, DOD has one. All these different organizations have their own mentor protege programs with different rules and regulations. And when I talk to people, I think the biggest part of the challenge here comes when you're brand new to the market and there's all these options. Like there really are. There's all these options and you're thinking, hey, this is an option I need to look at. But you're not taking into account your progression in the market. So for me, when I look at a company, your first 2 to 3 years in this market, I personally, unless it's just the exact right opportunity, I don't think companies that are under 3 years in the market should be doing anything but teaming. That's it. They shouldn't be looking at JVs. They shouldn't be looking at mentor protege. They shouldn't be looking at getting their 8A. They should be waiting till they're a little bit more mature, have a couple of years under their belt in this market, understand all of your options that are out there and when and how to use them. Because a lot of times you're trying to pull the trigger on something that you're not mature enough for. Now, you may be a seasoned business person, but when you start looking at these opportunities, it's like your company isn't ready for that. Because like if we just go back to past performance as one of the biggest things everybody struggles with in this market, when you get in the market, you need past performance. Fastest way to get it is be a subcontractor. Hands down, fastest way to get it. Because guess what? Somebody else out there who can prime probably has the past performance you need. They should be in the driver's seat because you don't know what you're doing. And they will teach you as you go. If you're open to it and you ask a lot of questions by you just being the sub. So when I look at the makeup of your opportunities, when you are brand new in this market, when I say brand new, it's your first 3 years, your makeup of your opportunities should only be about 25 to 30% where you're the prime. And those should be smaller opportunities. And the other 70% or so, you're going to be a sub. And then as you're starting to cross that 3 year mark, maybe even in somewhere in your 2 year mark, that number is going to start shifting. and shifting and shifting. And next thing you know, it's going to have totally flipped by year three or four, where 70% of the opportunities you're chasing, you're the prime because you've built the past performance and all that type of stuff. And then now there's only 30% where you're trying to sub. And so if you look at that progression and follow that path where finally at four years in, you're doing 70% as a prime, then it's a good opportunity to look at doing more complicated things like a joint venture, like a mentor protege, because you have more experience in the market and you will be more savvy about making those decisions, looking at those partners, who the right ones are, asking the right questions of those partners, asking the right questions of potential joint venture partners. You'll just be better and more mature if you just give it 2 or 3 years before you go down that road. Are there exceptions to that rule? Absolutely. I've seen situations where the right mentor came along and it was perfect for a client and they were just under the 3-year mark. And I'm like, yeah, let's do this. This is great for you. But a lot of times I tell them to hold off.
I love that you shared that timeline, and I agree with you on that. And I was actually thinking as you were talking about that, one of the biggest success stories that we have here at Govology, we actually had a small business. They were eligible for the 8A program, but they didn't come in and go into the 8A right away, but they actually came and got some education and they studied teaming and they understood, they started to learn about the teaming. And then they started to get out there and got out there to the conferences, started building relationships and networking with potential partners and teaming partners. They landed their first deal. Their first teaming deal was like a $3 million contract with the Army Corps. Now, that was not a joint venture. They were not even in the 8A program yet. But before they even did that, they got a teaming deal where another firm came in and they had a lot of that past performance and experience that the Army Corps was looking for, but the Army Corps was actually also looking to meet their small businesses' goals. And they told essentially this firm that they could have just contracted directly with, like, no, we want you to partner up with this small business. They didn't mention which one. So they got together and they partnered. But it's a really great thing when that happens because those partners can give you so much support. Not only can they maybe support you in some financial ways, but they can help you with proposal writing because if you've never written a $3 million Army Corps proposal before, you might need to spend $20,000 to hire people to help you out to make sure you're doing that right. To continue on with that progression, so they got that deal, and then they started looking at other things coming down the pipeline. They learned how to forecast, because a lot of getting all of this set up is being able to forecast and do the market research, all which we have training that people can actually go out and do. And you could start to identify opportunities and put like together essentially like what I like to call this the 5-year plan. But you got to get ahead of these solicitations. And we talk about that all the time, because if you're waiting till they come out on SAM, well, you're going to have a hard time, especially if you're going to want to put a joint venture together. It's really almost impossible to do within the time frame of an active solicitation. So you got to be forecasting these things, talking with your partners about what makes the most sense. And after you have an opportunity to work together and there's that comfort level feeling and it makes sense to do the joint venture, then you have that conversation. But if it's a large business, then you probably also need to have the conversation about getting into the SBA's mentor protege program, having them help you out. But, that particular business that I'm talking about, just recently, I mean, they're killing it. They just told me, hey, we just submitted a $67 million proposal with our JV partners. And they've got like 2 mentor proteges set up. But what did they do? They took their time. They didn't get they're 8A certified, but they didn't do that right out of the gate. They spent some time educating. They spent some time building their relationships. They got their first win before they even got into the 8A program. So now, because that's a 9-year program, the time is ticking. And I believe it just did it just right, you know. And People say that success leaves clues. And that's what I would use that person as an example of the right way to do things, you know. Yeah. But then once you get those teaming partners in the mentor protege program and the joint venture partners, there's so many ways that they can support you. It's not only about getting the experience and the past performance that you don't have, but I mean, they're helping these small businesses write proposals. They're putting up bonding that the small businesses sometimes can't get. And there's so many benefits to the programs. I really encourage everybody to go out and get some education. Again, we've got some great classes at Govology that can provide that. If you go to the on-demand area, just type in the word teaming. You'll find all kinds of stuff. Introduction to teaming, the three-part series. Got several programs about the SBA's Mentor Protégé program, which actually is different than most of the other programs like the DOD Mentor Protégé program that you mentioned, Michael. In fact, I'm actually going to be at the DOD Mentor Protégé conference at the end of this month here in Orlando. So anybody's going, let me know. But that program is more of like a big prime's going to bring on a subcontractor underneath them, where typically when you think about the SBA Mentor Protégé program, that's where the bigger prime will get behind the small business. Mm-hmm. And it is in that program, the SBA's program, in the SBA's program only, that allows for that affiliation exception.
One of the other things I like about the DODs is you can put together a budget. I think it's $1 million budget. You can put together that the prime can get reimbursed for a lot of different things, such as, you know, you need a bid matching system, or you need to upgrade your accounting system. There's a lot of things they can get reimbursed for paying for out of their pocket. And so that's really good to help you kind of go to that next level. But again, I think the big takeaway for a lot of people is slowing it down. Even when you look at some of the opportunities people chase, one of the things that I'm always telling my clients is, hey, that's way out of your weight class right now. You're brand new in this business. And if you don't have commercial past performance that's relative or relevant to that, then you have nothing to contribute when you're trying to chase some of these bigger opportunities. So start small and get a couple of past performance under your belt, then get a few more and a few more and just keep growing those levels. Because let's say the biggest contract you ever had was $250,000. And now you want to team with somebody so you can chase a $10 billion contract. Well, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. That's way out of your weight class to be chasing something like that. And so trying to slow people down is something I always do up front, because if we can slow you down, you're going to be more successful on the back end because you will have done it right. You know, you mentioned about how long it takes to get the JV or whatever done. You know, that's a process that may take months. So if you found an opportunity on SAM this morning and there's an RFP that's due next Friday, you're not going to get it done. You're just not. And I think one of the challenges that I see for government contractors just in general is a lot of times they feel like the RFP in front of them may be the last RFP they get to respond to. Or at least it feels like that. Like, we have to respond to this. Like, why do you have to respond to that? Because it's the only RFP that's open right now, or it's the only one of two, and we've got to chase it. Look, there's going to be plenty of opportunities. The worst thing you can do is actually win a contract you're not prepared to do work on. You know, something where you're way over your head, that will not end well for you at all. So you want to slow it down. Understand there's going to be opportunities coming out all the time. Understand one of the things Carol and I talk about all the time on this show is the fact that not everything the government is buying is on SAM. And that's really one of the biggest reasons why I'm always talking about teaming with people. One of the reasons you want to team with those companies that are selling to your agency is you've got proof they have past performance selling to your agency. So there was a question in the chat here about what's one of the best ways to find companies that need or want to team with you. It's go look at the data. If you pull up USA Spending or SAM.gov, you can very quickly, in a matter of minutes, whether it's by NAICS code, keyword, PSC code, doesn't matter, you can very quickly pull up a list of companies that are selling to your agencies. You can filter by agency. You can filter by place of performance. There's all kinds of ways to filter that stuff. And then you can have a list of companies that are selling to your agencies. And you can go through and you can contact them all. You can go through and go, oh, well, I know this one and this one and that one. You can say, I want to target the smallest one, the biggest one. There's no right or wrong way. But you have a list very quick in seconds of people that are selling to your agency. And those are the people you want to work with because they have a vested interest in the same thing you do. Now, if I back up again on the soapbox here, if I back up a little bit further, then you want to make sure you know who you want to sell to. That's very important because if you just want to sell to the government, that's everybody. So typically our recommendation is you're going to focus on, say, two or three agencies that you're going to zero in on. That's who you want to focus on. And then when you're doing your research, you can just say, well, I want to focus on these particular agencies. I want to focus on, drill down. Hey, I just want to focus on Air Force and Army right now. That's it. Or Army Corps of Engineers. That's all I want to focus on. Well, what vendors are selling to the Army Corps of Engineers? The stuff that you want to sell to them. And again, boom, you've got that list. Now you have some place to start. They're already selling there. They have the past performance. It's a very different discussion than just saying, well, I want to work with Lockheed Martin, or I want to work with General Dynamics, or hey, there's a MITRE office 2 blocks from my house. Because of proximity, I think it makes sense to work together. Well, what if they're not working with your agency? You don't want to waste that time. And they're not going to want to have the conversation with you. So pull up the data, get targeted about who you want to work with, and then it gets very easy to find contractors that are already there. And hopefully you can fill some sort of gap for them. And then, as Carol was saying earlier, eventually you can flip the script and go from subcontractor to prime, where you're bringing them in on opportunities.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Yeah, I wanted to also, you were talking about the things that people cannot see. I mean, sometimes they can't see it because it's under the 25K threshold that requires the government to publish it. But a lot of times it's also going through existing contract vehicles like GSA schedules. That doesn't go out to SAM for the task orders that's competed. So again, I think almost in every session, Michael, you know, we talk about market research, market research, market research.
And the key.
Yeah, if you go to Govology and you type in market research, we actually have a class called Market Research for Small Businesses Selling to Big Buyers. Josh Frank, Michael's partner, also has a training on market research called Who Buys What You Sell. And in both of these classes, I did the one on market research for small business selling to big buyers. But we literally like walk through that process of going to usaspending.gov, looking at a specific. Josh likes to use SAM as well.
He likes USA Spending a lot now, too.
I'm a USA Spending fan more than the...
Me, too.
There's two ways you can do it.
Yeah.
But essentially, you can get this data, download it, and with a few little manipulations, which you can learn how to do a pivot table on YouTube, literally. It's not that hard to do. You can break this data out in all kinds of different ways and see... You know, for like the Army, for example, who's the vendors there? What's the contracts they have? And when you start getting an opportunity to start to look at this, and it's going to start to make sense to you. And another way of teaming that's very beneficial is when you get that information, well, you find out maybe that, hey, they just competed this contract last year and it's not going to come up for another 5 years or 4 years. So what do you do? Do you wait? Or do you find out who those vendors are that actually got into the contract vehicles and start trying to build some relationships with them to show how you can add value as a team member and start working with them as a subcontractor on things that you would never see that's going to hit SAM? So all these little strategies, a lot of it comes through just taking some time to get the knowledge like you're doing here today. So congrats for you guys that are showed up here today, because this is one thing that is just, I see a lot of small businesses that want to do big things in this marketplace, but they don't want to stop and learn. And it took me like 3 classes when I started like trying to understand, because I came out of contracting and was working at the SBA's Portland District Office. And that's when the time that I was supposed to be like reviewing the 8A mentor protege and joint venture stuff. And so I really had to get educated. And it took like 3 classes before it clicked, because this stuff is kind of like, it just takes a while for it to click. So what I would say to you is that if you watch one video on this and it doesn't click, watch another one. Because once it clicks, then you understand it. And then once you have an understanding of it, you'll know, okay, now I need to have a conversation with these potential partners, but I know how that conversation needs to go. And what I would also encourage you to do is don't do it without a guidance of a government market attorney that can actually help you set your structure up in the right way, even if it's a teaming agreement. But most certainly, if it's a JV, you want to get their help with that. But even if it's a teaming, they can give you a template so that everything's in compliance. Because essentially, once you get your contract, you're going to need to issue your teaming partner a subcontract that matches what you stated you guys were going to do together in the teaming agreement. And so that's where a lot of people also want to kind of skip over that piece to either like save money and go find a template on the internet. But I got to say, one thing I can say in being in this marketplace for a long time myself now and going after opportunities myself, I mean, I told you, Michael, before we got onto this call, we just finished submitting one of our big, you know, opportunities. And we literally probably spent $10,000 to $15,000, even with all the education that I've got. But I want to make sure that everything's compliant. We have a second set of eyes that's experts in this industry looking at what we're doing. Legal accounting sometimes comes into play if you have to reconfigure your accounting system to match. So educate yourself, network, research. Also, I would just say work with your PTACs now, call Apex Accelerators. That's a great starting point as well to figure out how they can help you. But you got to be willing to also make some investments into your business when you need to do that. So Michael, I think, you know, we could actually just maybe summarize a few things here, but, and then go to the questions, because I know we've got a lot of questions and I'd like to be able to answer some of those.
I have two final points before you do that real quick. I wanted to cover a real quick mistake that a lot of people make when they're approaching teaming partners. I think the most common mistake besides just approaching anybody is approaching them without any information. So a lot of times a typical teaming type of discussion will happen where you see a company that is working with your agency and you just call them up and you say, hey, I want to have a meeting about teaming with you. And they say, well, what's it about? And your answer is really, well, just teaming with you. And they're like, so is this about a specific opportunity or any? And you have no answers. So that's very common. And a lot of times the pushback you'll get is, well, why don't you just send us your capability statement? And then if we need something, we'll call you, which they're never going to do, right? So what you need to do when you're going through the research phase is call the contracting officers, call the PMs, have a conversation about some things that are in their forecast so that when you do reach out to that teaming partner and say, hey, I'd like to talk to you, and they say, what's it about? You can say, well, there's the ABC contract that's coming out this spring with the Air Force. And I know you guys are tracking it right now. And I'd like to talk with you about teaming up because we'd make you more competitive. It's a really big difference than the first scenario where you're like, I don't know. I just want to team with you. So make sure that you have done some homework and you've got some information. And you can tell them, I'm talking to the government. I'm talking to the contracting officer. I've been researching this opportunity. And here's how we would play a role in you winning this contract. That's very important. That's number one. The second thing is a lot of times when people get into the teaming agreements, the big mistake that I see is they focus on work share. And if you are negotiating a teaming agreement and you have the opportunity, you want to negotiate task areas as much as possible and get as granular as possible. Some of the big companies are not going to let you do it, but when you can, focus in on task areas and say, hey, we want 100% of task area 3 and 5 or 50% of task area 4 and 6 or whatever it is, so that you have something more concrete than work share, because a work share situation, the first person that's going to get cut when there are cuts being made is the subcontractor. They're going to lose out. They're going to lose work share. Or better yet, the prime is going to say something along the lines of, hey, well, we're going to do the first 10 employees, get this thing off the ground, and then we'll bring you on later. And then later comes, or maybe never comes, but when later comes, you're like, oh, the budget's been cut. And now, you know, we just lost an employee and I'm sorry, but there's not a lot we can do and there's nothing you can do about it. And so try to negotiate task areas when you can. Always make sure you have information before you go talk to your potential teaming partner. And that will make teaming a lot easier for you. So those are my last two soapboxes.
No, those are two great points, Michael. You know, I mean, I 100% agree with you, both of those points. And so important. So what I want to do now is I wanted to go to a few questions. And so we actually had a question that came in to me. And before I get to this one, I want to talk about another call that I had just earlier this week. Somebody was saying that, hey, I got invited to get into a conversation on an upcoming IDIQ opportunity. We kind of got in on the last one, but we were kind of at the tail end of it, so we didn't really get a lot of work. What can I do to going into this conversation with this large contractor? So now they're having conversations with a large contractor that's actually looking to go after another one of these five-year contract vehicles. So the small business is going to be playing the sub part. One of the things I said, well, okay, if you know it's going to be this big contract, they're likely going to have a subcontracting plan that they're going to have goals to meet. Now, if you can start just what you were saying, Michael, about the task work and have that kind of conversation with them about, like, for example, hey, you know, what are you guys typically like in your last contract? A good question would be, where did you guys kind of meet your small business goals? What might you look to sub out instead of self-perform? Because typically a subcontracting plan is only on the things that they're going to sub out, not that they're going to self-perform. So if you see a contract for $1 million, this was a thing that confused me for a while when I was early. It's like, if you see a contract that's $1 million with a 10% subcontracting plan, that just basically, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to, you know, have that 10% goal, but it's going to be like of what they are not self-performing, then they're going to have a subcontracting plan to that. Now, that doesn't include all small businesses. It includes all of their other subcontracting partners, you see. So that was a tricky little thing because I was thinking like, okay, $1 million, $10,000, $100,000, 10%, whatever. It gets so confusing. So when you get the knowledge, you can understand how to have those conversations. But that was the conversation that I was having with this person just a couple of days ago. And the importance of being in there early and being able to have those conversations early on is because when those primes are actually looking to price their contracts, they're thinking also about, okay, I know that I've got these small businesses over here that I could sub out to. So we're going to set our subcontracting plan at X percent because I know where I can go to get that X percent. They're probably not just guessing at it a lot of times, right?
Right.
So the earlier you can be in having those conversations, having the conversations about specific work that you can do and that you do great job at, regardless, and then understanding what they are actually subbing out, it's an important part of the teaming when you're a sub. So we could talk about this all day, but I'm going to move on because we want to get to some questions. There was a question that was actually an issue that was submitted through our forum on our website. And I think that the question was asking, they're saying their company is a prime. Can their company assume their JV partner's capability statement and past performance for a small business contract? So it wasn't really necessarily written. So if this was your question, feel free to ask us if you want to raise your hand. But I think what they were looking at was like, can I market the capabilities of my JV partner with my capability statement? And the answer is yes. Typically, a joint venture will actually have its own capability statement. Yeah. It could be like RSM Govology Joint Venture. I like that, actually. Yeah. But we would actually have our combined capability statement, and we would bring together everything that we offer together under a specific contract. And so you definitely can joint market. I've even seen people that set up booths at trade shows where it's like same thing, like Govology RSM Joint Venture, and they're just marketing their joint venture.
I just saw that with a client of ours. It was actually a client I was talking about earlier who is around their 3-year mark, and their mentor is actually, I believe, paying for the booths, and they've gone to 3 or 4 conferences in the last just month or two where when you walk up to the booth, they have this big banner set up, and it is the ABC joint venture on it, and it's between them. And so you have the owner of the one company and the representative from the mentor company, and they're there talking to people about this joint venture they've put together, which is a whole other way. We haven't even talked about marketing, how you can market the joint ventures and the teaming agreements and all that kind of stuff. You can do that. I think even like how you saw us at the 8A conference, where if we had had a little bit more control of the booth situation, we'd have had Bank of America flipped around. But we did set up as close as we could to them because we work a lot with Bank of America. And that was a situation where we were walking people over to their booth. They were walking people over to our booth because we do a lot of stuff with them, and our clients work with them a lot. And so when you are going to conferences and things like that, you talk to your teaming partners about those kind of things.
Yeah, and you guys were even marketing as a team yourself, because a lot of the coaches that you guys have are independent consultants that you guys have brought under your umbrella, under the RSM coaches, and you had their pictures, and that was really nice how you guys did that.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's get to the questions here. And so we've got one here that says, we know there are four GSA projects we're interested in pursuing. The first was procured through an IDIQ task order. We applied but did not get on that list. We have partner firms lined up. We have capabilities briefings coming up. How do we convince them to put out three other projects as small business set-asides through a vehicle we can respond to?
Not necessarily a teaming question there, but I think, you know, when you're going through the capabilities briefings, that's an opportunity at that point to talk to the contractors about that and position with that. If they are doing any sort of RFIs, that's another opportunity to position that with them. But if they are already purchasing this off of a different vehicle, the odds are it's going to be difficult to change their mind. One of the things I tell people all the time is, it doesn't matter what the small business contracting goals are or vehicle goals are. Contracting officers have a lot of discretion on how they pursue some of these things. And if they feel there aren't the right companies in the market to go after it, and they're afraid of protests and different things like that, they're going to compete this in the way that's going to, number one, get the most and the best responses, as well as the least opportunity for any sort of friction, i.e. no protests and no one coming back saying it was unfair or anything like that. So it's difficult to change a contracting officer's approach to how they do this stuff. But as Carol has said numerous times today, getting there and talking to them early, like very early, having the capabilities briefs, responding to the sources sought, RFIs, having those conversations months in advance are your best opportunity. If they're already considering a vehicle, you know this, it's often difficult to change their mind. There is an opportunity to do a pre-bid protest or pre-award protest, not pre-bid, which I'm not a protest guy. I know a lot of lawyers may say that because maybe they get paid to do them. I don't know. Because it's a small win percentage. And I never like the black eye that comes from protesting. So I really think a lot of it is just in the hard work up front, months in advance, talking to contracting officers and positioning, hey, here's why this should be on this particular vehicle, or here's why it should be an 8A opportunity or a WSB or an SDWSB. Here's why, and giving them the facts, and then that's all you can do. You can't twist their arm and make them do it. So,
and I will say this too on that particular topic, Michael, is to just what you were saying, you know, get in there and show the contracting folks that you have the ability to do this. And there's multiple people. I think there's a disconnect here. And I'm hoping that this is getting better in the future. I've already actually seen where some agencies are starting to try to figure out how they can break some things up, set some things aside. I think this is exactly lending to that question.
One final point on that is you also have more influence with someone like this if you've done a contract or two with them. So if you're brand new, they've never heard of you, and the first thing they're hearing out of you is complaining about the way they're doing contracting, it's not necessarily a good thing. So if you have a reputation there, that allows you to put that reputation on the line to say, hey, you know me. you know the work I've done. And they'll hear it from a very different perspective than if that's the first experience they've ever had with you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was saying that every contracting officer is required to do market research. And I think that one of the disconnects is that the way that they do market research is not leading them to find well-qualified vendors out there. And then you've got well-qualified vendors who are not really doing the best job at reaching up and in. And sometimes people are not even responding to source of sought requests. And I asked one of the agencies one time, like, why aren't you guys doing more veterans set-asides? It's like, well, you know, we put source of sought requests out and you know, we never really get, sometimes we only get one veteran that will respond to it, you know? Yeah. So there's kind of some things that you really have to do for yourself to make sure you're having the conversations to say, hey, we're here and we can do the work. So
yeah,
we'll move on from that question. And I'm going to go to the next question and read this one, Michael. Somebody says, I have a sole proprietorship currently making less than $50,000 a year. I started it 5 years ago with longtime clients from previous employees and decided to make it my full-time job around last March, given my extremely limited size. Is teaming still the best option for me to start with government contracting? My Apex advisor mentioned micro-purchasing as another possible option for me. If it makes a difference, I'm working on my VOSB cert, but don't qualify for any of the other certs.
I think the short answer is yes, teaming is still a great option.
Mm-hmm.
When you're small, you leverage other people's resources. Teaming is a great option.
And I think that also, like, all of the above can also apply. For example, with the micro purchase suggestion, one of the things I like to ask businesses is, what is the average size of what you sell? Like, if you're already making sales, what's the average size? Because if their government was buying that, does it go like higher than 25K, right? The micro purchase limit for most things is 10K with some exceptions, but you could assume that 25,000 and under is also like a micro purchase. It just doesn't follow the P card procedures all the time, like you're used to seeing, but those are very small purchases. And so how do you get involved with those kind of opportunities? And there's a lot of things where you don't need to team if you can actually do some things for yourself. And This is like, we spent in our own business a long time, like the last 10 years, most of it was spent going after micro purchase opportunities as a subcontractor. And we just recently, in the past couple of years, really started going after the big stuff because, first of all, as a solopreneur, I didn't want to go after that by myself and like have to have all the management and all of this stuff. There's a lot that goes into it. So you need to also take a look at what's on your team. Are you by yourself? Do you have a bigger team that can actually manage the contracts once you get them so somebody can be doing the work? Because there's a lot of compliance and a lot of requirements that go on with the bigger stuff. But you could actually, this is a great way to start. You can actually start with some of the smaller opportunities and not even have to worry about the teaming, you know, but you might need some different approaches to navigate your way in there because they might not post those opportunities that you're looking for at SAM.
Absolutely. I think the next question was about, are any Canadian companies doing business with the government? Short answer again is yes. There are people from a bunch of different countries that do business with the U.S. Mm-hmm. government.
Which is also interesting, Michael, because some of those, even if you're a Canadian company, you could essentially, if you want to participate in the small business U.S. marketplace, and you've got some things that you can help that small business do, you know, you could effectively still team up with them to pursue small business contracts. You know, you won't be probably able to go after small businesses yourself if you're not a U.S.-based small business, but you could definitely support a small business as a subcontracting teaming partner. You can come in as a subcontractor. You could do direct opportunities if it's full and open competition and mm-hmm. there's no restrictions. So there's a lot of ways you could do that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you asked the question about mention. You can go to Google and put in your NAICS code, search agencies that hire what you do. I don't know that we said that. I think if you don't know your NAICS codes, you can go and look them up in Google. But when we're talking about doing market research for agencies, we're talking about using USA Spending or SAM.gov. That's where we're typically talking about. In SAM, you're primarily going to use NAICS codes for that. You can use some keywords. But I find USA Spending is easier to use when it comes to keywords to find those agencies in.
Yeah, if you just go to usaspending.gov, look at the top tabs, and then click on advanced search, there's going to be like a little panel off to the left. It's really super simple. You could actually put your NAICS codes. You could select the fiscal years that you want to look at.
It's all kind of criteria. Yeah.
And then that's where you can also download a spreadsheet. And if you learn the pivot table trick, you can really kind of do some cool things with market research.
Somebody asked, do your recommendations regarding teaming for 3 years differ according to the type of business? For example, they run an IT business, primarily in small Microsoft environments. And many of the recommendation steps I've seen, say construction firms, don't apply to the type of business. So teaming applies to every kind of business. There are situations where it's a small contract, a micro type of contract, like Carol's been talking about, and it's just unnecessary to have a teaming partner for those. But just about any contract can be approached with a teaming partner. Mm-hmm. Again, especially if you are fairly young in the business, don't have a lot of past performance. Or here's another thing. Let's assume you've been in this business for 10 years and you've only focused on one agency, but now you're trying to break into a new agency where you have zero past performance. That's another opportunity to bring in teaming to break into a brand new market and team with a company that has past performance with that agency. Because sometimes you're going to see on an RFP, you just need three relevant past performance examples. And they don't care who it is, what agency or anything like that. And then you're going to see things where it'll say, like, let's take FAA, for example. They're going to want to say, I want three past performance examples with the FAA. You may see that. And when you see that, you want to make sure that your teaming partner has those past performance examples with that agency. And on the flip side of that, even if it doesn't require three past performance examples with that specific agency, you're in a better position if you have them all with that agency instead of a situation where you show up and you have past performance, but it's with other agencies that aren't connected to them. They're not sister agencies or something like that. So for example, you've worked with the FBI, but you've never worked with the Army or anywhere else in DOD. So the person who shows up and has three Army past performances for an Army contract, they're going to have a leg up over you if your stuff is outside of the agency. That's a great way to get in there on the teaming side of it.
Yeah, and I will just add one thing. You know, one of the biggest success stories you would ever see, and there was a little bit of a controversial period for this company, but a company called Microtech in the IT space, they came out. This was a contracting officer. A lot of knowledge came out, started a company at his kitchen table, went and partnered up with, you know, like some big name IT firms. And a couple years down the road, like maybe like two, three years out, they were like doing over $1 billion in sales. But I mean, that shows you what the power of teaming is, but it's just like every company is a bit different. So you really need to understand teaming and how it really would work best for your company and the situations that you're wanting to pursue and the relationships and how those have kind of been established and developed.
Yeah. Hey, one of my favorite questions in here is the next one. It's about, can teaming occur after a contract has already been awarded? I think a lot of people assume the answer to that is no, when the answer is actually yes. You know, Carol alluded to that earlier about talking to primes that were awarded these giant IDIQs and building relationships with them and becoming subcontractors under them. That could be anything. Let's say that you are actually competing on a contract and you lose. You don't win the RFP. You can then go to the company that's won that and say, hey, we were chasing this as well. Congratulations. And if you need some help, you know, with A, B, or C, we can do that work for you. So we can do that. And they may say, hey, that's nice because the company that we had put on the RFP, she just went out of business. And so we are looking for a partner on that. I see that all the time. Now, it doesn't mean everybody's going to be receptive to it, but it does happen after a contract has been awarded.
And I will also say that in the competition phase, you can also be on multiple teams. So if you're just a subcontractor and you know that hey, maybe Michael's company's going after this thing and a couple of other people that I know is going to go after it. And maybe I'm not in a position to go directly, but I might approach Michael and I'll say, hey, Michael, we'd like to be on your team. Would you look at maybe subcontracting out this thing that we do really well? And then if I know of a couple of other people that are also going after that, I could actually be on their teams as well. Now, there's some situations where your partner wants some exclusivity, but there's other times where it's like, hey, if we're not going to make you our exclusive like sub, what's to stop you from going out there and getting on multiple teams? And I've seen this before. I actually helped a company bring in a bridge company that, under a small business contract. The bridge company didn't even know existed. We're like, hey, would you like to work with this small business to team up? They're like, sure, but we're going to also spread our chances around with some of the other people that are applying. So they put their sub bid on multiple teams. So that's another way of looking at a strategy.
That's awesome. That's a great story.
Is there a limit on the number of entities in an affiliation so long as the total resources / income still falls under the small business specifications? So is there a limit on the...
I almost have to read that like twice.
Yeah. And by the way, guys, if you want to raise your hands and ask a question, feel free to do that. But I think that what the question is that if there's a team and as long as the team's revenues fit underneath, and really you're talking about a joint venture because that's typically when they're going to combine your revenues. But if each one is small under the NAICS code, then you can still be considered small as a team. And in fact, I know I'm not a lawyer. I was thinking about bringing Stephen Goprince on, but there used to be where it's like if they actually would combine the revenues and then they would add up for two small businesses over, it would actually kick you out of that small business. But I think that the law did change where they do allow for if like, Michael, you're small, I'm small under the NAICS code, we can, you know, partner up on the opportunity together.
Well, and the only thing I'll comment on this one is there are some tricky situations and nuances to questions like this. Understand the advice that we're throwing out here is general advice. There may be a nuance that we are not aware of that would change our advice. So based on the information we share or that was shared, I think that's really where you should look at like Carol's advice on that. And his follow-on of definitely bring in an attorney to take a look. Mm-hmm. There may be more to this puzzle than just the questions that were asked here, and it may steer us in a different direction. So sometimes questions like this are a little complicated. I don't want people to think, oh, well, this is 100% the answer. It's based on what you've shared. I believe this is the answer.
Right.
But there are some things that may complicate this.
There is a good second part to that question. So maybe before you hop off, you could address this because I think it's a good point to address. And of course, they're talking about if one member of an affiliation, I think what you want to say is if one member of the team is an 8A and another of a, you want to avoid affiliation. Affiliation, bad.
That's a bad word.
Right? You don't want to be affiliated. So, okay, Michael, let's just use a hypothetical. Like, so I'm an 8A company, you're a VOSB company, and we're teaming up, right? So like maybe there's a 8A opportunity, and you're providing a lot of support under that. Now, a lot of times, even though we're both still small, dependent upon how close we are operating together, like let's just say we not only are partnering up, but we also share management across a different company. So they're going to look at a lot of things. But here's the key to this that I think a lot of people don't also realize. Even when you're two small companies, if you are like a lead partner, like, and you're not doing a lot of the work, or if your partnership with a SDVOSB or a VOSB company is like too closely related that the government doesn't like, essentially they could still say you're affiliated with this company, even if you are still under the small business size standards. Well, how does that impact you? Well, if they basically say, well, we believe that by the way you operate, you're actually affiliated with this VOSB company, and hence, because of that, you're not actually an 8A company on your own, that could also present not only issues for you to be precluded from an award of an 8A contract, but it could be also issues that may impact your certification. That's why I say work with an attorney on these things, as it relates to your teaming structures, so you can sit down and talk specifically about what you're wanting to go after, who you're wanting to partner up with, because your attorney, and not just any attorney, but a GovCon attorney, we have some of those in our directory. If you go to resources on the Govology website and go to Trusted Experts, an attorney that understands government contracting, because they can walk you through the compliance that you need to make on that, because there's nothing worse than teaming and going after a big opportunity, expending a lot of resources with your teaming partner, and then all of a sudden, because you didn't have everything done just the right way, you're subject to a competitor being like, or I would call a protest on that, and then you get knocked out of the competition, right? And then your partner probably won't ever want to team with you again. So that's why I really encourage everybody that wants to do that, talk with an attorney, get your education first, do what you can do for free. Because again, when you get that education, you understand the conversations that you need to be able to have. It puts you on that level to be able to have the conversations.
Yep. The more mature you make yourself, the better. And you'll get mature by slowing down, asking the right questions, and just continuing to educate yourself. So Carol, it's a great session today. I've got to hop off. I don't know if you can stay on and answer the rest of the questions, but I do have to hop off.
I will stay on for a few more minutes. I see we've got a couple of more questions and somebody's got their hand up. So
Sounds good. Thank you so much. Thanks,
and
Carol.
For a great
session. See you next time.
All right. Take care, Michael. James Sutton, see that you've got your hand up. Want to ask a question?
Hi, Carol. I'm from Ottawa, Canada, here in Ontario, right close to the border. Okay. And I've got a SAM account, and I'm looking to slowly start doing business in the U.S. I'm a contractor. I have a small business here in Canada. I do a lot of business with the federal government here in Canada, and some business is a bit of a crossover when I've done stuff with the military. I mean, we are allies with the U.S. and other countries also. So I'm looking to take that step and do business, I guess, micro purchaser level to start off with. Okay. Piercing earlier. I'm a member of the Govology site, obviously. Mm-hmm. Is there any pathway I should be taking towards educating myself and slowly start bidding and teaming and all that sort of good stuff you've been talking about today?
Yeah, a great place to start would be if you go to the Govology website under training, and we have a series called Government Market Fundamentals. And a lot of the stuff we talked about, like the market research, prospecting for micro opportunities, as well as the general opportunities that go out there, forecasting. If you go down that list in order, I actually set that up in a way to really give a foundational understanding of like all of these areas. And in fact, in the last training, and I'm looking at it right now, that I've got on that series is called Submitting Compliant Offers to Government Agencies. But it's a little bit different. We actually have a lot of good proposal writing training on the site. But in that particular course, because we work with a lot of small firms that basically do that, I talk about crafting small opportunities and being able to do reach-ins. And I talk about what I like to call as a getting your foot in the door offer. And in fact, I'm going to actually be doing a webinar on that particular topic later on this month. But as a contractor coming from Canada, you're probably not going to qualify for any of the small business stuff that gets set aside in the federal market. So you would maybe want to team up if you see bigger opportunities that you can't go after directly with maybe other US-based small businesses and kind of add your capabilities to theirs. But also, if you're doing things under micro purchases, a lot of times micro purchases don't get set aside. So if you're building like a little promotional flyer, or whatever is the strategy that you're doing to reach into the agencies and say, hey, we do this thing and it's about this price, maybe like $5,000 to $8,000. If they want to buy from you, they can. And they usually can do that just with a purchase card. And the requirement for a small business set aside usually starts where the micro purchase threshold ends. So when you see like things that says acquisitions under 250 must be set aside for a small business, well, that actually starts at where the micro purchase ends. So there's a lot of discretion that the micro purchase buyers have on how they use it. So your hardest job, though, will be to try to understand how to get your product or service put before the particular agency that you want to actually sell to. And a lot of times you can, people reach out to the buyers, but I also say, how do you reach the end users? Maybe you go to LinkedIn and you have a title for the type of end user you want, because end users, usually the people that generates the requirement that gets purchased by contracting, if it goes over the micro purchase threshold, but if it's under, they might just be able to talk to their department head and do a purchase card buy in-house. So that would be what I would recommend for you. Go through that series over there at Govology. Again, go to govology.com and under training, click on Government Market Fundamentals, and then just go through that. And then follow up with me as you get through it and let me know if you have any questions on those things.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you very much, Kerr. I'll go through it and choose the courses, and I'll follow up with you in a few months.
All right, awesome. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
All right. All right, looks like we got Jill Lawson with her hand up.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for this whole event. I've learned so much. It's really incredible. I'm a retired acquisition program manager, and I've been on the other side and managing DoD contracts for years. I just recently retired. So this is really getting in the weeds and really interesting. It's really quite fascinating. And what you're saying, I can tell you, is you're very, very truthful. I mean, what you're saying is very applicable, and it is the reality of being a contractor, from what I understand and what I've experienced. I do have one question for you, though. Have you started dealing with or giving any information about the cybersecurity maturity model certification that's required? DoD contractors?
Yeah, we actually have a couple of classes on our website at Govology. So if you go to On Demand and you just type in cyber, you see what we have there. We're looking to build in more. And also, if you go to govology.com/cohorts, we actually have a cohort that's all dedicated to cybersecurity. The intention of that is for contractors to start at week one, and it's about a 10-week cohort. And by the time you get through that 10 weeks, you're going to get a systematic education, but you're also going to get group calls each week in a cohort format with the expert that's one of our partners. And it'll help small businesses go through. And by the end of that, the goal is that you can actually have some confidence into self-certifying at that level one certification. And then from there, you can go to different pathways outside of that. You know, of course, there's the level two and three and stuff like that. But level one's a good place to start out. And that's what we've got so far. But again, we're looking to build some more education in that front. I also know that a lot of the APEX accelerators, as they've just recently been moved under the umbrella of the DoD Office of Small Business Programs, have a new charge to do some more training as well in their areas on cybersecurity and help folks get through that. There's also a website called Project Spectrum that the DoD's put some resources on, and those are free at the Project Spectrum site. So that's what I know about that. Between Govology, some of the support out there through the APEX accelerators, formerly known as PTACs, and then the efforts of what the DoD Office of Small Business Programs has put together for resources.
Well, before I retired, I was part of the working group that put together the CMMC.
Oh, awesome.
And since I've been retired, I'm now a certified assessor, and I'm starting my own company specifically to help small businesses understand their contractual responsibilities, and also the business decisions they have to make. All of the resources that you stated, and there are plenty more others out there that are free, they focus on the actual certification processes and all the resources needed for the certification processes. My business, Straight Line Fed C3, which is Federal Cybersecurity Contract Clauses, focuses on the CEO, CFO business decisions. So they understand what they have to resource. They understand what it is they are actually protecting and how to define it. And they also understand the long-range benefit the DoD contractors in the history, time-space history of federal contracting are literally in a position to explode their businesses because the DoD is the first agency. However, there are other agencies and internationals coming on. Foreign military sales is coming aboard in 2025. So,
awesome.
There's a lot going on there. And I maybe we could talk offline because I think I would like to. I'm gathering resources to provide the business owners, the customers of my training is called the CUI 5 Business Pillars. And at the conclusion of my training, I provide a listing of resources for the business owners to go to find out more information on the technical aspect, because I only addressed proposal writing, contract compliance, and the business decisions, the hiring, employment contracts, and all those business things. But I do like to provide resources and also links to trusted providers that can help them technically get into compliance. So maybe we could talk offline.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll put my email address down in the chat. If you want to shoot me an email, we could set something up. But yeah, I'd love to chat with you.
Wonderful.
All right. Thanks, Jill.
Oh, yeah, I'll post my contact information right here.
Okay. All righty. Let's see what else we have. Did we get through all the questions? I think we might have a couple of more. Let me get to this one. One question was, how do you find the effectiveness of industry conferences such as the DoD one for teaming ops, especially when going in cold? You know, I think the conferences are great. You know, when you get to them, you get to network and meet people. I was going to actually say this earlier about the conferences, but some of the best networking happens after the official hours are over and you see people start to get together. They go out and have dinner or have drinks together and just talk. This is where I see some of the best relationships happen. So I would say, you know, with going in cold, have a strategy about like who you want to specifically talk to when you're going to be going there and reach out to them and say, hey, are you going to be at the DoD conference, for example? I'd love to sit down and have a talk with you. A lot of times what happens at these conferences that I'm noticing is that the organizers try to do a matchmaking event, which is really great. If you can get into the matchmaking event and spend 10 to 15 minutes talking with the agency or maybe a prime that you want to talk with, those are great. The challenge is that the spots are limited. So if you don't get onto it right away and you miss out on that opportunity, you might not be able to do that, or you might not see the person that you want to talk to that's actually showing up for a matchmaking session, but you know that they're going to be at the conference. And actually, I just went through this process myself because I'm signed up for the DoD Mentor Protege Conference, and there's a couple of folks I'd like to talk with, but they are, I don't think they're signed up for the matchmaking. So I'm reaching out independently to see if I could set up a time to talk with them. So let's see. There's another question here. I'm a WSB, 100% WSB in VA, I guess Virginia. Their prime is 236-220. I have received sources sought from several agencies ranging from 10 to 25 million. I'm guessing all the way up to $100 million projects, way outside of our capabilities. Researched WSBs in Virginia and found about three that have similar capabilities, running into difficulty in getting two of us to respond to sources sought. Have you seen a WSB with 2 million plus bonding get awards in my NAICS? Thinking about pivoting to renovations, build outs, thoughts. Have you seen 2GC's team? Not GC sub-team successfully. So those were a lot of great questions in one sentence. So, and Jeanette, if you want to, feel free to pop open your mic if you're still with us and have a chat. But a couple of things I will say in there is that, yeah, there's like 10 to 25 up to $100 million range for a small business set aside. This is actually one of the areas where you will need to find a teaming partner and maybe even a joint venture partner. So again, if you can do the market research and if you are forecasting and if you know that, hey, there's like opportunities that range from 10 to $25 million, but I get your point. There's only so many WOSBs that can actually do a response to that. But what I will also say, if you can manage to basically get the team together that they can back you up in the bonding that you might not have and they can bring together the team. So this is one situation where you might consider going down that pathway, going through the process of getting set up with a joint venture inside of the Mentor Protege program with a good teaming partner that actually can bring a lot of the bonding and everything so that now you can go back to that agency and say, hey, and I'm guessing also if you're a woman-owned business in the construction industry, you might also be a small disadvantaged business because a lot of women in the construction industry are able to make the claim. Right now, there's increased goaling for small disadvantaged businesses as well. So it may be you might have some success in going to the agency and stating before it goes out to solicit, say, hey, we've got like the WSB certification. We're a small disadvantaged business. You know, we can do the work. Would you consider now when they do a source of sought and you respond to it, if they need to meet SDB goals and WSB goals, which by the way, the SDB goals have increased. I don't know if you guys know that, but they're like more than double what they were just a couple of years ago now. So a lot of agencies are very interested in the SDB goaling. So if you had that conversation and you knew that the project was coming up and you could say, hey, we've got this great partner, done a JV specifically for this opportunity, which by the way, you don't actually have to wait for the opportunity to be solicited to build a joint venture around it. You could identify that, hey, this is something that we want to do. But like Michael was saying earlier, you do need to have in mind what you want to do. So let's just say if you knew that there's like a $15 million project that's going to be coming down the pipeline 2 years from now, there's nothing to stop you from having conversations about that opportunity, starting to network, getting to know who the facilities folks are, getting to know who the buyers are, getting to know who the good teaming partners are, maybe do a couple of dates, right? So you got to a couple of years before that comes out. And then you identify that opportunity and you say, for this opportunity or these types of opportunities, but you will use one first, we're going to go ahead and start doing the legwork to get into the joint venture inside of the SBE's mentor protege program with this partner. And of course, you want to have the good relationship there with that particular partner, and then you could do that. Now, here's the cool thing. Once you do the work for that and you get it and you're waiting for that opportunity to come, let's just say another opportunity pops up out of the blue that you didn't know that it was going to be something that was coming down the pipeline. You didn't have it on your five-year plan or your forecast. Well, what you can do, because you've already gone through the legwork to get that joint venture set up, to get into the mentor protege, if that's the pathway that you go, you did all of that work. Now, what you can do is like while your first joint venture was set up to go after this opportunity, you can actually modify it where you can still go after that other opportunity, but you can modify to go after this one that you didn't see. And it's a lot quicker. So this is another thing that you could talk with your attorney about, but I definitely feel that there's an opportunity for you to do that. And if the agency is trying to meet their WSB goals and their SDB goals, they do have some sole source authority. So if you respond to that source of sought, and this is related to everybody really, you know, but if you responded to the source of sought for a WSB contract and nobody else responded, but the contracting officer wanted to do a WSB set aside and they did their market research, you're the only one that responded, they can have the authority to actually do a sole source contract with your business. Of course, there's a lot of conversation that needs to happen kind of before all of that like actually gets put on the street for a solicitation, but it is possible. So the other thing that I would do is I might just, if I knew of another partner, that's another WSB that we could team with, and you might have already been doing this, that actually has the capacity to go after those kind of things with their teaming partner, I might form a little mini alliance where it's like, hey, why don't we submit together? We'll submit for this scope of work as a sub. If you guys get it as the GC, you could do that. If we do it as the GC and you guys want it to sub, then we win either way. But your question about can two GCs team up? Yeah, they can. But I think that when you're looking at another rule that applies to subcontracting called the limitations on subcontracting, you need to make whoever is the lead in that has to actually do a certain portion of the work. And so as long as you can do a portion, the right portion of the work, typically for construction, that's 15% for GC in the 236, 230, and 25% in the specialty trade NAICS codes. You need to understand how that works. But usually what I also say to GCs is that, you know, if you can have one area that you specialize in and do some specialty work in, as well as be a GC, or maybe you come in as a specialty trade contractor and you're seeing all the stuff go for GCs. So maybe you do it the opposite way. You've got this specialty trade that you do, but you understand that, like, if you really want to control your own destiny, you have to be able to have the ability to do some GC work as well, so you can capture that work for yourself. So there's a lot of strategies around all of this stuff. And so, but I hope that answered your question.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Did that answer the question?
It did. I'm not one that's really, I don't want to take on $100 million project. And then, yeah, you know, I'm a very independent thinker. So, and I can actually operate a business since, you know, I own it and I have all the certifications, which is a little unique. So yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how I enter in. And I think maybe just trying to find someone who's doing build out or tenant outfit for like the DOD or the Department of Interior, because we're close to like Norfolk. It's just hard because there's not that many WSBs that can handle, that I can team up with. Do you see what I'm saying? I'd have to team up with a non-WOSB, but maybe I can find a veteran owned or something. So thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And good luck to you. And you know, the other thing that I will say about teaming as well, which I think is something that you just alluded to, but, and again, this applies to everybody, is that how comfortable do you feel with relying on somebody else to actually show up and get the job done when you're taking the lead on the contract? And, you know, there have been horror stories in this area. So again, you want to be careful and not just jump into, you know, the first relationship that you see and get married, because it can go south. And when I was actually working at the SBA, we had a young 8A firm. I was like, oh, these guys are going to be like the superstars of the program, because they went from like 500,000 in year one to like 5 million in year two to bankrupt. And it's because they had too much reliance on their subcontracting partner, their teaming partner. They took on too much debt, and they thought that the contracts would keep coming in, and they got into a really bad situation that they couldn't get themselves out of. So, you know, teaming can be great when it's done the right way with a good person that you know and trust, but it can also have the opposite side of the effect. One tip that I also want to share too, if you go and Google approved SBA mentor-protege agreements, they're actual, you can go to the SBA's website and you can actually download a list of all of the currently approved mentor-protege programs. And what I might consider, if you guys are looking for a mentor, is maybe reaching out to some of those mentor firms that are already mentoring other firms, because a mentor firm can have more than one protege firm, but it just can't be in the same kind of competition area. It could be in different geographic areas in the same, you know, NAICS code, for example, but they don't want them competing against each other. But the other thing there is that I've also spoken with a lot of mentors and bigger partners that are just not happy with their small business partners, because they thought that they were going to be going after a lot of work together, but that's not what's happening. And so, and sometimes the small business freezes up and they're just like, get a bit paralyzed. So, you know, there could be good opportunities to go through that list and kind of like see the different areas that people are partnered up in, and maybe, you know, reach out to some of those, because those are folks that are already interested, obviously, because they're already mentors to other firms within the program. That's just another tip I threw out there for everyone. All righty. I think we've got to about all of it. Somebody was asking about the cybersecurity. So you're saying it would take 10 weeks to understand level one. I think for the cybersecurity, it might take more to understand it. But, you know, that particular cohort that I was talking about is just something that we're working to get people at that level to be able to understand it and actually have the stuff done. So I think that we covered it all. If anybody has any questions last minute, feel free to raise your hand. But other than that, I think we're going to close the session for today. And thank you all for joining us. Thank you for attending. I think this was a great topic. Again, we have some really great training I would suggest you take a look at on Govology if you want to learn more about teaming. Also, one last thing here I will say is there's a good book on joint ventures on Amazon that was done by Coprince McCall and Potroff LLC. They're actually one of the federal contracting firms that specialize in this area. So the book's called Joint Ventures, and that would be a really good read as well. And again, have some patience and just go through multiple courses and read up on it, because the goal is not to know everything that there is to know about it, but just to be able to have the conversations with your teaming partners, being able to have the conversations with your attorneys, and understanding kind of how all this works together. So there's a lot of nuanced details, but if you can get to that level, then that's going to be very helpful to you in your efforts. So with that, I will say goodbye and thank you all for joining us. And we're going to see you again next month on our next Coffee and Issues episode. Take care.